the Montreal Canadiens are one game away for competing for the Stanley Cup. Welcome to Hockey Central. Jeff Merrick, Anthony Stewart, Justin Bourne. Welcome to the program. Bottom of the hour, Brian Boucher will be aboard. We'll talk to him a little bit about last night. We'll do a lot of it in this first half hour, and then we'll get into tonight's matchup with the Tampa Bay Lightning look slash hope to close out against the New York Islanders at the Coliseum. Meantime, Stewie, Justin, holy smokes, 4-1 with the empty netter by Suzuki at the end. The Montreal Canadiens do it again to the Vegas Golden Knights. Couple of headlines in this one. Marc-Andre Fleury starts for the Knights. Interesting. Chandler Stephenson, he's back in. But the song remains the same. The Montreal Canadiens continue to be the story of these playoffs. Borny, we'll let you kick it off today. Kotkaniemi, Staal, a beauty from Caulfield, and the empty netter by Suzuki, Max Pacioretty, the lone goal by the Vegas Golden Knights. 4-1 is the final. And does it not feel like all Montreal needs to do is tap this one in for par?
Yeah, it does. It's like, it's tough to see it going any other way after watching a performance like that in Las Vegas. Like, you know, that's going to be the push last night. Like, you know, what do you have, Vegas? This is your chance to really take a hold of this thing. And man, Montreal gave them nothing. I give them full credit for their opportunistic play. Like, none of their goals are coming off extended ozone possessions. They are just being patient, waiting for their chances, and when they come, picking them apart. There's a Mike Kelly stat that like their last seven goals have all come off 7 seconds or less in the offensive zone, meaning everything is off a zone entry, which is pretty incredible, just to show you how opportunistic they've really been.
What do you think, Stewie? What happened last night?
Well, last year they almost got Bubble Demko at the Vegas Golden Knights, but this year they're getting Montreal'd, where they just can't seem to figure out any of that offense. And you saw it on Mark Stone's face, just his frustration on his turnover there that led to the Caulfield goal. And they just can't figure it out. And the one tipping point for me last night was after the second intermission, just seeing Coach Pete DeBoer rip his mask off, just frustrated. And it's just a frustrated group. And to see that from your coach, that shows that they're almost defeated, because, you know, they have a million game plans, million face-off plays, but they just can't seem to solve the Montreal Canadiens and Carey Price. So for me, it's just textbook game, you know, game planning, coming in, waiting for your opportunities, playing the game the right way. I keep saying it all the time, and I don't want to toot my own horn, but I did say it was going to be 4-2 last night for Montreal. But great game by them. One more game for them to bring it home. But for Vegas now, they have to find a way to address. I don't know if it's systems, if it's personnel, but 2 years in a row now where they're struggling to score goals. That's not good for a team contending for the Stanley Cup.
It seems as if, from a Vegas point of view, and I want to get to the Habs here in a second, it seems from a Vegas point of view, the only player that's bringing it shift in and shift out, I'm not saying no one else is trying, and I don't want to be that insulting to the Vegas Golden Knights, but it seems the only one who's really getting anything done, shift in, shift out, is Alex Pietrangelo. Every time he's on the ice, doing something, every time he's on the ice, scoring chance, get it out of the zone. Like, there's always something, Justin, when Pietrangelo is on the ice. I can't say that about anybody else on Vegas. And again, it's not for lack of effort. The effort is there, but there's just no results from anybody, it seems, other than Alex Pietrangelo.
Yeah, and he definitely has been their best player. The offensive question for Vegas is a good one, and one that I would say that a lot of us have had in the past. You know, just where is it going to come from? But man, some of these guys have just got nothing accomplished. I don't know if Marchessault is like tripped out by playing the Montreal Canadiens team, being Quebec-born himself, and like the history of it. But like, he's got the yips. He gets the puck somewhere near the net. He's just about hitting field goals over the glass. He's not even close to hitting the net. Hello.
Time for church, guys. Let's go.
That was a wild. I thought.
Jean Baptiste is coming up. It's Thursday, and that's when the Montreal Canadiens
the church bus doing a flyby.
it was just wild. Like, our show doesn't do drops, and all of a sudden, if we are, I'm like, okay, give me a heads up.
That one was kind of epic. No, but you're right. You're right about the forwards. And one of the things that I think we've always marveled at, and maybe this is again, we talk so much about roster construction, how you put a team together. Is there one specific way? Can you do it a bunch of different ways? I don't know if there's something to this, but the thing that's freaky about the way the roster was put together for the Vegas Golden Knights is it doesn't seem as if there's much of a premium put on centermen as much as there is wingers. Pacioretty, Stone, Marchessault, Smith. I mean, those are your top four wingers. And your top two centers are Chandler Stephenson and William Karlsson. Common wisdom is strength down the middle. You know, get your big boys down the middle, put your best athletes, your best players down the middle. Vegas doesn't do that. It's defense and wings. I don't know. This is such a small sample size, but it is a couple of seasons in a row. Is there something to that? Is there something that you look at and you say, maybe that's what's wrong with this forward group? Because this isn't the first time this has happened. This happened, you know, as Stewie mentioned, and we called it getting Demko'd last year. This has happened to Vegas a couple of years in a row now.
Yeah, my thought is like, you know, Philip Deneau and what he's done in this postseason has been so effective at neutralizing the opposing center. He might be the first defensive forward that I think you need to key on. Like, they need to make his life hell and slash him and, you know, give him the extra shot after the whistle. This guy can't just quietly go through another series shutting down your best guys without any sort of pressure. But, you know, to your question about the construction, I don't know if it's that so much as just Deneau neutralizing whatever centerman he's up against and him being someone the other team needs to key on a bit.
Yeah, I would say that, and maybe in a series against, you know, Anaheim or you know, the LA Kings where they have Kopitar, but I don't think Montreal has a top 20 center in the whole entire league, so you can't blame it on the centers. But for me, I think it's just in-game adjustment. If a certain system's not working, if you're trying to run teams out of the building, it's not working, you got to find a way to adjust. If the power play's not working, you have to make some in-game adjustments. And I think some of the other coaches, you know, like a Barry Trotz or a John Cooper, their in-game adjustments is very, very great compared to the rest of these teams in the playoffs. So that's what I don't like. They just continue to do the same thing and hoping for the best, hoping Stone taps one in the power play, hoping Smith does something, Marchessault, or go off the fly, but it's not going to happen. It's the semifinals of the Stanley Cup. You got to find a way to get it done.
I want to go back to Justin's point here about Philip Deneau. Like, he is someone who's been around the Selke conversation for a number of years. He is an unrestricted free agent, by the way. After turning down a pretty big offer at the beginning of the season. To me, the story around the Montreal Canadiens, I mean, the easy story is to say, well, look at Carey Price. Look at what Carey Price has done. Carey Price isn't letting in any of the goals. You know, he lets in one, maybe two a game, and that's it. But the story around Montreal and the story around Carey Price is that none of these shots are dangerous. None of these shots are threatening. He's turning away the shots he should turn away, and you can never fault him for that. But to me, the story about the Montreal Canadiens is players like Philip Deneau, you know, hounding the other team's top centermen, shutting them down, not allowing them to do anything, allowing low percentage shots from the outside and the point, and then that's it. Like, you can make the argument for Philip Deneau. Like, let's just say blue sky here for the Montreal Canadiens. They win the Stanley Cup. You can make the argument that Philip Deneau deserves a Conn Smythe trophy more so than Carey Price because he's not allowing anyone to get into a dangerous situation to put a puck on his goaltender. I'm not taking anything away from Carey Price. He's making the saves he has to make. But the story is, I mean, Borna, you always have these stats. High danger chances. It's always like 18 to nothing for Montreal, 13 to nothing, like no high danger chances for the opposition. That to me is the big story here around Carey Price, is it not?
Fine.
As you're talking about Deneau and his, what he's done, it occurs to me that I need to do a breakdown of his play and what it is he's doing to neutralize these opposing centers. Because you're right, it's Conn Smythe worthy. Like, has anyone ever won the Conn Smythe and not scored a goal? But like, if they go to the finals and Braden Point gets shut down, yeah,
a goal.
But if Braden Point gets shut down in the final and Montreal wins the Stanley Cup, like, I'm going to be hard pressed not to say that he's not the front runner to me.
Yeah. What do you think, Steve?
No, 9.5 out of 10 doctors recommend Carey Price for the Conn Smythe. The other half has half a brain. And I think the best way to sum it up, if you take one of these players out of the series, who's more important to the team? And I think it's Carey Price. And I don't think he's been that overworked, but he's just making some great saves, incredible saves, but at the right time. And that's what it's all about. That save on Smith that he made in the third period, if that goes in, no one would really fault him to that, but that would really put the clamps down on Montreal. So that big save, that's what makes him the best goaltender in the world. And that's why, you know, every year in the players poll, he's rated one of the top goalies, because he just makes the timing, the save at the right time. And we're talking about, you know, who's going to be on the Olympic team next year. Carey Price is your starter. Carey Price is your starter. I don't care what anybody has to say about that.
And Marc-Andre Fleury may be on that team as well. And Marc-Andre Fleury,
Robin Leonard. Robin Leonard's going to, he's transferring, he's turning Canadian.
Transferring his citizenship?
Yeah.
Turning Canadian. He's already competed for Sweden, sir. I'm not sure that he'll be allowed to compete for Canada, but nice try. Although we wonder if we're going to see Robin Leonard on Thursday. What did you guys make of the move about going back to Marc-Andre Fleury? Not that, you know, ultimately it was going to matter at all when you saw how Vegas played yesterday, but there was a part of me that thought, okay, that's the moment of opportunity for Vegas to get the guy that not just the coach wants, but the franchise wants in there. Yet they go back to Marc-Andre Fleury. Borny, did that surprise you?
Well, Jeff, why do we think they want Robin Leonard in there instead of Marc-Andre Fleury?
Well, because he's the guy that they brought in at trade deadline last
year.
He's the guy they signed to an extension. They tried to trade Marc-Andre Fleury to the Pittsburgh Penguins, as Elliot points out, by trying to use both the Los Angeles Kings and another time the Anaheim Ducks as a third party to make the money work. Like, they've tried to get him out. Yet, yeah. One of the most,
I think they just want a good goalie, and Fleury's expensive. I just think they want a good goalie. Whoever's playing good, he's just a little bit more expensive. So if you have two, he makes sense to be the guy to go. But I think they're happy just having a goalie.
But I mean, you look for the preferred player, and does it not seem to you as if they're waiting for that? I mean, the thing about Marc-Andre Fleury is he's turned in an exceptional season. Mm-hmm. Like, he's put himself in the conversation for top goalie in the NHL. Yeah. Right, like he's one of the finalists for the Vezina. You can't deny that, and so
yeah,
you gotta,
I just think I see your point about the contracts and all that. I just feel like at this point they just want a goalie who they think is going to play well. You know, for me, this whole thing came down to Marc-Andre Fleury and what he had done earlier in the playoffs and the run he was on, and not looking like they're like turning their back on him immediately. Like, the second he has a bad game, he's out, and then he loses the net. Like, I don't think they wanted to do something so drastic. But now, I don't know about you guys, but I kind of think you have to go back to Leonard, who won in Montreal last game, who played wonderfully. Not that Fleury was bad last game, but you need someone to be exceptional. And I thought Leonard and his performance in Montreal was pretty close to that.
Yeah, I got an analogy, but it's pretty gross, so I'm going to say it anyways. It's like when you have a scab and you rip it off and you're like, oh my God, I instantly regret that you try to put the scab back on. It's
back
too late.
On the tape.
So it's too late, you know what I mean? You already pulled Fleury, you put Leonard back in the net. Leave Leonard in there. He went in, he did a job. So again, I really thought that the reason why they took Fleury out originally was because they actually did think he was tired. But at the same time, you know, you see what's going on with the Islanders. You know, they pulled Sorokin, they put Varlamov in, and Varlamov did the job, and they left him in there too. So, again, I sort of know that Pete DeBoer sort of had history playing mind games with the goaltenders. You don't want to do that. But I think generally they thought Fleury was tired. That's why they gave him the night off. But you have to go with Leonard. He did a great job in game four. So, you know, I think Leonard's going to be starting next game.
You know, when you say the word scab around a player's associations, too, it has a completely different connotation. One is as unintended as it may have been from you. Well, what other takeaways do we have from this? Like, I don't believe in the let's learn from the Montreal Canadiens and let's do what Montreal did, and that's the way you're going to have success in the playoffs. This is, everyone needs to follow this model, because every team that's successful, I always maintain, the general managers and the teams that aren't successful try to emulate what was successful previous to them, as opposed to charting out their own team and their own path. But what's been impressive for you guys, mm-hmm, outside of the obvious?
Well, I have an article coming on Sportsnet here in a few hours that touches on exactly that. So the takeaways for me are, you know, you see people saying, well, maybe the North Division wasn't so bad. You know, do we now think because the fourth place regular season team is doing so well against Vegas that the North might have been better than we thought? I think the my conclusion there is just the North Division ended up that everyone was kind of in the middle. You know, the division wasn't as bad as people thought, but maybe the top end teams weren't as good as we thought. Everyone was sort of in the middle, and there was no easy nights and free points. Other takeaways related to that would be Vegas's division. I think Vegas ends up looking pretty good because you're getting a lot of points against San Jose, LA, Anaheim, Arizona. You know, they had some really weak teams in that division. So a couple of divisional takeaways. And then just I think that Edmondson and Sherrod are better than I thought. I like Lehkonen. They got some players who are better suited for playoff hockey. And as far as middling teams go, they're just well suited for playoffs because they're veteran, they're reliable, and they have goaltending.
My takeaway that hockey is still traditional. It's not ready. We're not trending towards, the Globetrotter top hockey. If you want to be successful, you have to have good goaltending. You have to have solid defense. And you just got to play that game the right way. And the prime example are the Islanders and the Montreal Canadiens. No real superstars up front. They have a system. They have a buy-in. They have a coach that makes the team believe in the system. They are adjusting on the fly. So, you know, I know everyone's saying, skill. But even if you look at a team like the Tampa Bay Lightning, when the game gets rough, you got guys like Point and Chernak and guys that are in the mix too. So to think that it's just going to be offense that's going to win you the cup, I don't think we're there yet.
The one thing that I keep coming back to with the Montreal Canadiens is we talk about Philippe Deneau and what he's able to do defensively as a centerman with the other team's top center. I think you have someone in that roster who's 21 years old and already looks like a mini Patrice Bergeron, and that's Nick Suzuki. I think this guy has superstar written all over him. And I don't want to downplay the contributions that Max Pacioretty has made to the Vegas Golden Knights. And this was a team that, you know, found lightning in a bottle and said, we're going for it. We can't wait for green bananas to ripen here. We need to, you know, trade picks, trade prospects, whatever it takes. Our owner wants the Stanley Cup now. And it cost him Nick Suzuki. But I think that one day when we look back at that trade, we are going to say, how? How did they get Nick Suzuki away from the Vegas Golden Knights? That to me is going to be one of the crowning achievements for the Montreal Canadiens and Marc Bergevin. And you'll say, that is a signature trade. Like, that's one you put up at the top of the resume.
You know, he was drafted 5 years ago today.
Oh, was it 5 years ago today?
Today, Vegas drafted him.
That's right. That's when they had the three first-round picks, right? It was Glass, Suzuki, and Brännström, and they traded two of the three. But it was go-for-it time, right? Yeah. I don't know. I just, every time he's on the ice, everything around him just screams pro, and it always has since I first saw him play with the London Junior Knights before he even made it to the NHL. Like, they're just some guys that are mature well beyond their years, when like 14, 15 years old, and they grow up and they turn into accomplished, polished hockey players by the time they're 21. Man, that's Nick Suzuki. Like, the guy wants to be Patrice Bergeron. The guy wants to be Ryan O'Reilly. And he's becoming that in front of our eyes. Like, I cheer for players more than I cheer for teams. Man, do I cheer for Nick Suzuki. I got all the time in the world for that guy. You guys have a thought on number 14?
Well, it's just, you know, looking at this Montreal team and writing about them a little bit today, you know, I was putting together how you win when you don't have superstars in the NHL. You know, when you're a team that is, you know, to Stewie's point about them not having a top 20 center in the league and not having a top, you know, point getter and not having, you know, I don't know where Shea Weber is if you put together the best defenseman in the league, but probably outside your top 10 at this point. Sure. You know, they don't have those guys, but what you have is guys like Suzuki who are reliable, and they're on the right side of the pile, and you know, when there's a puck battle, they're erring on the side of the defensive side of things and looking for those opportunities. And so you have a team that there's not a lot of cracks, there's not a lot of weak links in the chain. It's just he's such a complete player at such a young age that, you know, with a little bit more brawn and old man strength, you're right, he could be one of the better two-way centers in hockey.
Yeah, but that's development. No one really is drafted, you know, especially in the first round as a two-way guy. That's something that's development. That's something within your network and the development of your organization. And you got to give some of the other teams credit. When you use a first round pick on somebody, you know, you're hoping they turn into a Patrick Kane or they turn into an Austin Matthews. So for Suzuki, they didn't know he was going to be this good right away. So you can't really say, yeah, Vegas, you know, they thought he was going to be a dud. They just threw him away. They were going for it. They made a good trade. It just so happens, and that's how the draft works, it's a bit of a crapshoot that he just happened to develop and turn into a really, really good two-way forward.
He was like this, though, in Owen Sound.
I mean, 45 goals?
What's that?
I was scoring 35 goals. I didn't care about defense. Could you imagine scoring 45 goals? Come on.
But this guy was, you know, maybe it's just because he wore, maybe just because he wore 37 when he played for Owen Sound. He just looked at me and goes, oh, yeah, okay. So that's that guy on Owen Sound there, the guy that really stands out, the one that we can't, you know, stop watching, the one that seems to be on the ice every single time. And, oh, yeah, he wears number 37. Maybe that's why he reminds us of Patrice Bergeron. But just knowing the kid's background, like, that's who he wants to be. Like, yeah, he got who was it? There was someone in the hang on, let me find this here really, really quickly if I can. There was a player on the Providence Bruins. This is how much of a fanatic. Okay? This is how much of a fanatic he is about. So much of a fanatic he is about Patrice Bergeron. So there is, what's the kid's name? He also played with him at Owen Sound, and he was wearing number 37 for Bergeron as Suzuki is playing with Montreal, and he got hot at the guy. He's like, you can't wear 37. you're not allowed to wear 37.
That's his own 99, is it?
But that's like his with Boston was his main point. I'm gonna find it here. Filibuster.
But that's development as well, Jeff. And Jeff, that's development too. And you look who his coaches were in junior there. His last year when he got traded to Guelph, he had George
Brady Lyle. That's it. Brady Lyle. Yeah. Brady Lyle's wearing 37 for Providence, and Suzuki got hot about it, saying no one with that color scheme and that organization should wear number 37 except for Patrice Bergeron. That's Nick Suzuki.
Yeah, man, he's the real deal. Yeah.
He's intense about Bergeron, man.
That's great. I think that's great. That's a great person to have as a role model. I'm surprised I didn't get more out of you two on the North Division thing. Does this change how you feel about the North Division in terms of Montreal being the fourth place team in that division, giving it to Vegas here?
I didn't want to buy into the conversation about which division is stronger and we'll see who comes out and who goes the farthest. And that's going to be the ultimate commentary on the division because so many things change stylistically from one proposed matchup to another. Like, let's say right now it was the Maple Leafs against the Colorado Avalanche and the Avalanche steamrolled the Maple Leafs. Would it be a comment on either of the divisions? I don't know. But the Maple Leafs are one win away from, you know, from moving on to the second round and the final of the Scotia North Division. So I don't know that it's sort of validation of the North Division as much as any win by any of these teams is validation of their divisions. It's because there's so much that goes into hockey and some styles favor certain teams when it comes to matchups and some doesn't. So I'm not really explaining it very well, but I don't think that we can read too much into the division by who came out of it and who they're beating. I think it's just a comment on that team at that time against another team at that time. I don't think it's a comment on the division.
I think the problem is, though, that they don't really want to give the guys that put up all those numbers their flowers. And people don't really think McDavid and Matthews are that great and Marner because they didn't really do well in the playoffs, that they were that ahead of the curve of everybody else in the league. And they were. So I think they're sort of, you know, they can't differentiate between team success and player success. But I wouldn't be surprised if Colorado or Vegas were in that Canadian division and got beat by the Maple Leafs too. So Montreal earned it. At the end of the day, they earned this opportunity. They beat some really solid teams. But it's the National Hockey League as well. So don't think that, oh, it's a second-tier or third-tier division. That's not the case. And, you know, I would not be surprised if you see a Calgary make the playoffs next year or even an Ottawa, and there's four or five teams, you know, that are from Canada in that playoff picture. No, I would not be surprised whatsoever. And I'm hoping that day comes so I can shut up all the haters on Twitter.
Because that's what you live for right now, just zipping people up on Twitter. That dumb Twitter. We'll hit a break. We're going to come back with Brian Boucher. We'll get on the Islanders-Tampa page. We'll also get his thoughts on what's happened between the Habs and the Vegas Golden Knights. Vegas on the brink of being eliminated again. Montreal on the brink of going to the Stanley Cup Final. A one win away. All eyes on Thursday. More Hockey Central in moments. Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Montreal Canadiens can close out on Thursday, so all eyes on that game. Meanwhile, tonight at the Coliseum, the Tampa Bay Lightning hope to punch their ticket to the Stanley Cup Final and defeat the New York Islanders. Alongside Anthony Stewart, Justin Bourne, it's Jeff Merrick. Welcome back to Hockey Central. Please be joined now by Brian Boucher from NBC Sports. Of course, one of our finer NHL analysts, one of the finest NHL analysts you will find anywhere. And as goalies will tell you, it's because we're goalies. We know everything about the game. Brian Boucher joins us now. Brian, how are you today?
I'm doing great, Jeff. Thanks for having me. Great to be with you guys.
The pleasure is all ours. And before we get to tonight, I did want to sort of frame this a little bit by, you know, goalie commenting on goalies and goalie commenting on goalie decisions. I do want to get your thoughts on how Carey Price has played, but I also want to get your thoughts on Peter DeBoer's decision last night to go back to Marc-Andre Fleury when it seemed as if that was, I don't know, Brian, how would you describe it? The moment of opportunity for them to make the goalie switch to Robin Leonard. What did you make of the scenario last night at T-Mobile Arena?
Well, I think, you know, I did the Colorado-Vegas series, and I was mildly surprised at DeBoer's decision to start Leonard in game one of that series. And then understanding, you know, his reasoning behind it. You know, Fleury's 36 years old. In the regular season, he'd get some rest in certain situations. You kind of could understand where he's coming from, and it played out okay for them, right? They lose that game badly, but they turn around and win the series. I say mildly surprised because I thought with 2 days off in between games one and two, there was time for Fleury to get rest after, you know, game one. But anyhow, you know, now we fast forward to this situation, and you think about Leonard winning game four. And the idea behind Leonard even playing game four was the premise of rest, right? And you have to take Peter DeBoer at face value when he says it. So if that's the case, I thought that he was going to go to Marc-Andre Fleury in game five. I said it on our telecast with Edzo that's what he'd do. It turned out that way. I actually thought Fleury looked a little shaky to me. He looked nervous. He was fighting it a little bit. I don't blame him for the loss, but it just didn't look like the same Marc-Andre Fleury that I saw in the Colorado series. So I think right now what he's going to do is he's going to go back to Leonard in game six. And I think right now it's Leonard's series. And, you know, he's going to play game six. And if they win game seven, it'll be Leonard in game seven. And they'll deal with the Stanley Cup final if they get there. But right now I think this is a Robin Leonard series. And you know, as to your first question about Carey Price, I think he's just been rock solid. And, you know, at times there's been spectacular play in the playoffs, and at times it's just been a real solid team defense in front of them. Those top four for the Canadiens keep everything in front of them. They protect the middle of the ice. They're willing to give up the outside shot. They trust Price. He's seeing pucks, and this is one of those things when that ball gets rolling downhill, sometimes it's hard to stop if you're the opposition. I think right now this Canadiens group believes, they know they're an underdog, but they believe in one another. Their goaltender's been rock solid, and it's creating a problem for the Vegas Golden Knights.
Stewie.
Bush, before we get back to the series at hand, I just wanted to ask about our former team, the Carolina Hurricanes. We were teammates there in 2010 and 11. What do you think of the direction that they've taken, and how do you, are you surprised by the success they've had under Ron Brendamore? And what are your thoughts generally just on the Carolina Hurricanes as an organization?
Yeah, I think they've done a nice job. I mean, they've drafted well, they've developed well, Stewie. And I think when we were there, that, you know, maybe it was starting to play out that way. You know, like, you know, I remember Justin Falk was a guy that was coming up and was a hot shot rookie, and he did a nice job. But I think since then, they've really done a nice job of drafting and developing. And I think Rod Brindamore is the perfect coach for their group. I mean, you know as well as I know how hard that guy works, how much he takes care of himself. And when the guy, you know, that's steering the ship is doing that, it's hard not to follow suit when you have that type of guy leading the way. I just think they're a good team. They've got the right blend of skill, speed, you know, the back end's good. I have questioned the goaltending at times for them, but it seems to be good enough. I mean, I wonder if Nedeljkovic is a guy long-term that could be a real solution for them in goal. But, you know, because we're seeing when you get to the, you know, the final four, you're running the guys like Vasilevskiy, and these guys are world-class. And I think Vasilevskiy was the difference in that series, and their power play was too. But I think Carolina's in the right spot. I don't know that they're a team that's going to go above and beyond, maybe like some other teams, as far as spending to the ceiling. We'll see how it plays out with Dougie Hamilton, if he gets another deal elsewhere, or if they just move on from it. If they move on from it, then I suspect that they feel confident about what they got coming up and what other options they can do that, you know, maybe will save money. But they're an exciting team to watch, and I think, you know, for fans there in Carolina, I think it's fun to be a part of that and see a team that plays at a high level.
We should take you to the New York-Tampa Bay series, and I'll ask you a very professional question. The Islanders just lost 8-0. What the hell?
It happens, right? I mean, sometimes you you stink and you lay an egg, and I think that's what happened. But, you know what, Justin, I think what happened was if you go back to game four, third period, I thought the first 3 minutes of that period, the Islanders did a good job. They got pucks in deep. They got on the forecheck. It looked like they weren't going to be sitting back. Then Braden Point scores as he gets through the neutral zone. It's kind of a – looks like an innocent-looking wrister from outside. They score, and then all of a sudden they kind of clammed up a little bit, and they started to get passive in the neutral zone, and they started to allow stretch plays, and Tampa started to get going. And they fell short, Tampa. They didn't – you know, we know the Pulocks, Dave, but – that carried over to game five, and typically stuff like that doesn't carry over. But I thought in game five, the Islanders were way too passive in allowing Tampa Bay to get out of their own zone. They were, the defense were too far back, so these guys started to, you know, the Lightning were able to use their speed through the neutral zone. Then the D, who did a great job in game four of keeping plays alive in the offensive zone and hammering down the wall, they started to make some, you know, questionable decisions, because I think they were trying to be aggressive, yet they weren't all on the same page, led to some odd man opportunities. It was just, the whole thing was a colossal mess in game five. It was not who the New York Islanders are. And I think, you know, we all know, like, I think it's easier to flush an 8-0 loss like that down the toilet and regroup than it would be to lose a game in quadruple overtime where you outshoot the team 2-1 and you think you should have won and you just missed an opportunity. So I think they're going to come home. I think they've got enough veteran guys on that team that know how to, you know, park it, move on. We'll see a much better Islander team here tonight. I suspect that they're not going to try. They're going to try to limit Tampa Bay's neutral zone speed and neutral zone play. And if they can do that 5-on-5, they got a chance. And they got to stay out of the box, obviously, too. They got frustrated in game five, and the power play got to work, and so that was the story of that. And if, you know, I think the side story of all is, if Stamkos all of a sudden has found something here after that game five, could spell trouble for the Islanders. But I think the Islanders are going to put forth a much better effort.
Stamkos on that line with Cirelli and Killorn was outstanding every time they touched the ice. With Brian Boucher, tonight it is the New York Islanders looking to stave off elimination as they face off against the Tampa Bay Lightning. And you kind of touched on this, like what the Islanders need to do against Tampa tonight. But with there's just so many weapons that Tampa has. I mean, pick your poison. Any line can do any amount of damage, and the power play is just lethal, as we've seen. We had an interesting discussion about that power play yesterday. You know, I know Clutterbuck is running around, and I think it was Palat that he hit, and so Cooper sends out PP1, even though they're up 5-0, to send a message. Does that carry over at all into a game like this? Is that something the Islanders look at and say, all right, you want to keep running it up on us, or do you just look at this and say there's no such thing as momentum between games? There's no such thing as a 7-game series. There's only 7 1-game seasons strung together in the playoffs.
I think the Islanders can't be worried about the fact that they put their top power play unit out in a situation like that and get upset about it. I think, you know, they got to worry about winning one game tonight. They got to get this series back to Tampa. And how are they going to do that? They got to stay out of the box, number one, and that's something that they've done in this series. You know, you think about it, leading up to Game 5, only 2 power play goals for Tampa Bay in this series. So it really wasn't a factor. 5-on-5 was a wash. Pretty even series when you really break it down. I mean, I think the Islanders have done a pretty good job. You know, I just think that they've got to refocus and get back to what makes them good. And I think, you know, that's number one. When they get pucks in behind Tampa's defense, they get in on the forecheck, they start to generate momentum that way. And it starts with their fourth line. They tend to do it a lot. You know, and then, you know, from there, I think it's one of those things where you just feed off of it, you know, and then the other lines get going. I think Barzal has a lot to prove tonight in this game. I know that he was frustrated in that last game. Anytime you get a situation where you get a 5-minute major, you never know how it's going to play out when it gets into the league's hands. You know, it turns out, you know, he's going to get a chance to play tonight. And I think, you know, that he should look at it like another lease on life, and he's got an opportunity to have an impact in this game. I think he's going to want to have a big game here tonight. Like I said earlier, they have to do a better job in the middle of the ice in the neutral zone and not allow Tampa to stretch them out and allow them to come out of the zone with ease. And if they can do that, I think 5-on-5, they have a chance. But the other thing that bears watching, it's easy for, I think, teams or skaters in general to shake off an 8-0 loss, right? I always question, Stewie, maybe you know about this. I always question, like, how does a winger really feel when you lose 8-0? I mean, they're upset, right? But, yeah, I think the guy who takes it the hardest is the goalie that got pulled, right? Like, that to me is, like, how will Varlamov respond tonight? How will he be early on? Will he be shaky? Will he look like the game is going 100 miles an hour in front of him? Or will he be rock solid? If he's rock solid in the first 10 minutes, I think things are going to be okay for the New York Islanders. They could use the energy of their crowd, get back to the principles of their game that give them the opportunity to win. And if they do that, they have an opportunity to get it to Game 7. But it's going to be a tough test. I mean, this is a real good team, the Tampa Bay Lightning, that's proven that they can win a lot of different ways. It's not just a run-and-gun team. They'll grind it out with you if they have to. They don't panic under pressure. As you can see, they haven't lost back-to-back games in the playoffs now in a gazillion series. So it's a formidable task tonight for them. They're going to have to find a way to grind this game out, and I think that's what the Islanders, exactly what they want to do. Nice 2-1 win, hard-fought defensive game. If they do that, they have an opportunity.
Yeah, Bush, it's still very, very early, but say the Montreal Canadiens get past Vegas and Tampa past the Islanders. How do the Canadiens match up against Tampa Bay? And I'll put you on the spot here. Do they have any chance of winning the Cup against the Lightning if that's the case?
Okay, so we're getting presumptuous here. Okay, I'll play along with you, but I don't want people to say that that's what I said.
They're gonna say that.
You know what? Yeah, you know what? I thought the Canadians were gonna lose to Vegas in 3 games. I really did. I did the Colorado Vegas series, and I just thought Vegas was fast. I thought they were physical. They had the goaltending. You know, maybe the power play was slightly concerning, but, you know, they were getting scoring from Marchessault. Pacioretty was playing great. Stone was, you know, doing a good – and then all of a sudden it all dried up. Why did it dry up? It dried up because I think the Canadians have 4 guys on defense that are just mammoths back there. They are tough to play against, and they keep everything in front of them. The forwards work their tails off. They get back for those guys. They protect the middle of the ice. They keep everything to the outside. Even on the PK, they don't run around. It's like they're happy to keep people to the outside. Guy, you know, the defensemen don't expect, Weber doesn't extend himself too much. They're a real smart player. You know what I mean? They know that they're going to give up something. They give it up from the outside, but they'll block shots too. And so, you know, with all that being said, I think the Canadians are proving me wrong. They have a chance. They really do. I mean, who knows? I mean, if you play 5-on-5 and don't allow Tampa on the power play, that's where Tampa can really sting you. You know, and it proved that way in game 5. Stamkos gets a power play goal, and then once you know it, you know, well, he scored early on in the game, but he also got a power play goal, and now he's a factor in this series right now. So we'll see how he responds in game 6 if now they've got two scoring lines, because before this it was Point and Kucherov in this series and really nothing else for Tampa Bay. But, if, you know, Tampa Bay's got two lines scoring and they got that third line that's crashing and banging. You know, it's a tough team to beat, but I'm not going to count Montreal out anymore. Not with what they've been able to prove against Vegas. You got to take them seriously.
Bush, barring two wins in a row by the New York Islanders, tonight would be the last game in Nassau Coliseum. Do you have any Coliseum experiences there? I guess, what does this, that rink mean to the Islanders tonight and to their fans in general there?
Yeah, it's. I don't really have any, you know, personal story. I mean, I played there with, you know, against the Islanders, you know, with the Flyers. But I got to be honest with you, when I was playing for the Flyers for the most part, and we played a lot of games there. The Islanders, I think, were, you know, they had their struggles there. It wasn't the same team that we see right now. There were some sparse crowds. It lacked the energy that we see right now, and I can understand it. You know, there's so many great years there. And Fort never lose, and you know, I think the fans were just a little upset. But I think for the fan base, it's a real special place for them, right? And I think the players that are playing there now, they're understanding how important that building is to the fan base, and I don't think they want it to end. And that's why I think tonight we're going to see a much different Islander team than we saw in Game 5. I think they were too passive, too tentative. Maybe they were nervous. I'm not really sure. But it's a veteran group, and Barry Trotz is a great coach. I think they're going to respond tonight. I don't know that this may be the last game in this building. If it goes to 7, who knows? But I think we're just going to see a much better Islander effort tonight. I just can't imagine that they're going to lay down and let the Tampa Bay Lightning, you know, step all over them. I think you're going to see a much different effort here tonight.
Let me finish up here with Brian Boucher. Let me finish up by asking a personal question then about rinks from a goalie point of view. Which were the toughest rinks to play in from your experience as a goaltender in the NHL?
If a building was empty, I didn't like playing in those environments for whatever reason. You know, the lighting wasn't good. I always found the lighting to be dark. I don't know if it's that way anymore. I think it's kind of changed. I found the lighting to be dark in Long Island, so I don't know that I ever really like got fired up to play there that much. I struggled in Montreal. Maybe that's because I was a huge Canadiens fan as a kid, and maybe just intimidated going there. You know what I mean? Like you just kind of get, you know, yep. You probably get a little too excited. Always enjoyed playing in Boston. Detroit was a hard place to play, you know, for a lot of reasons. One, they had a great team, but I always found the boards to be really hard there and really fast. Everything happened a million miles an hour there. There's always different, you know, but now I feel like the buildings are all the same, right? Like, yeah, you walk into a building and you could close your eyes and open them up and you feel like you're in the same spot. I mean, I know Toronto looks a little different because you got to walk through the fans down below. Montreal has a different feel to it, but really, aside from that, there's not a lot of change from building to building. Maybe it's good, maybe it's bad, but I never got to play in the Boston Garden, so I never got to play in that small ice surface. But I went to plenty of games there as a kid because I grew up in Rhode Island, and I was not a Bruins fan growing up. As I said, I was a Canadiens fan, so I'd go there and you'd see the fights in the stands with the Canadiens fans and Bruins. It was quite a wild environment, but never had a chance to play in the old Boston Garden. I think that would have been a treat, but maybe that would have been awfully fast too on the smaller ice surface.
Small, I think it's like 180 by 80. That is a tight box to play hockey in. We've kept it for far too long. We appreciate your time. Enjoy the game tonight, and I'm with you. Like, more games at the Coliseum, the better. We'll see how the Islanders do tonight as Tampa looks to close out. Brian, thanks as always for stopping by. We appreciate it.
All right, guys. Great to be with you. Take care.
Thanks, Brian Boucher from the NHL and NBC, NHL analyst. In advance of working tonight's game, the Islanders facing off against the Tampa Bay Lightning. When we come back, Justin Bourne, you are going to tell us something. Mm-hmm. Do you know what that is?
Is it gambling?
No, it's not gambling. I'm going to ask you if you are going to coach your son in hockey.
Oh, yeah. No, I look forward to that conversation.
Hold on to this one. We'll try to park as much time as we can as we finish up Hockey Central here, giving way to Smith & Jones, top of the hour. More in moments. Sportsnet 590 The Fan. So judging by your Twitter, Justin Bourne, you are on the horns of a dilemma. Do you coach your five-year-old kid in hockey or not? Now, you maintain you've always resisted in your mind. True or false?
True. You know, I didn't want to be the over-involved guy who was, you know, liable to get yelled at by other parents if they don't feel their kids aren't getting enough attention or the right attention or being taught the right thing. Like, I just wanted to stay out of it. Yeah. And my, you know, and that I work in hockey makes it even me even more eager to want to stay out of it. But on the other hand, it's my kid, and I know a lot about hockey. So, you know, maybe that's overthinking a little bit here. What do you guys think? I mean, my gut is that maybe I do like an assistant coach thing. I don't know.
I checked out when my kid started playing AAA, and my youngest son is coached by Rafi Torres. So there's nothing that I'm going to be able to do that Rafi's not going to be able to do a million times better. But I'll defer to the coach on the show. Anthony Stewart, last word is yours. Advice for Justin Bourne.
We know how much discipline hockey requires, and Justin, you know, and I know, our kids probably have no discipline. Our attention span is close to zero. So sure. Send them to someone else. Let them deal with the headache. Coach someone else's kids.
I love that. I love that advice. I'm happy to watch and chime in here and there, but, like, you're right. I'm not great at the whole discipline thing. I need him to have some. Get Tortorella. Get Tortorella in for Charlie.
Dude, listen, honestly, you get one chance to do it. At least try it. Seriously.
I don't know. Torn.
Do it, Barney. Do it.